Hello, everyone, and welcome to another America's Conservative Podcast. I am your host, Ed Denzel. I start that the same way every show. How consistent am I? It's Friday. I'm in Madeira Beach as usual. It's windy out. I think we're going to get some rain today, but maybe I'll get a little practice in, a little disc golf practice in. I have a tournament tomorrow. Really looking forward to going up to Floral City, and there's a park there called Floral Park, which is just south of the little town. Floral City is a very little town. But they have a really nice park there with a really good disc golf course. I wish it was closer. But I'll be playing there two rounds of 20 holes. They have 20 holes there instead of the, I guess, standard 18. And going to see a lot of people that I know there. In fact, I'm going to be playing in the same division of one of my good friends who I've mentioned before on this show, Cameron. He's in my division. And so we'll see how we do. I'm playing in advanced, so I could really get my butt kicked. But that's okay. Did you see this story? I saw this on FoxNews.com. This trucker, truck driver, who drove nonstop from Seattle to Massachusetts. And the reason this is a big deal, of course you should know that to drive from Seattle to Massachusetts, I'm going to say in a 18-wheeler probably is going to take about 40-some hours. I know it takes about 33 hours to drive from Pittsburgh to Las Vegas because I did it three times. So Massachusetts is further east, Seattle's further west. You're in a truck, which is probably going to go slower. It's probably going to be 40-some hours. Well, he did it nonstop. He probably had to stop because those trucks generally only hold about 1,500 miles of fuel. Those trucks get about 6 miles to the gallon. And each one of those trucks, I think, holds around 250-gallon tanks. So they get about 1,500 miles, something like that, to a tank of diesel. So he had to stop once. But when he got to Massachusetts, he was locked out of his truck. Somebody noticed that there was something wrong with this guy, and they figured out that he was on crystal meth, LSD, and cocaine, and had driven from the West Coast to the East Coast with no sleep. And not to terrify any of you, but this happens more than you'd probably like. I have two brothers who used to be truck drivers. My brother Michael was a truck driver for a few years back in the late 80s to early 90s. Both of my brothers and my sister are a few years older than I am. Michael drove for a few years, but my brother Brian drove from the late 80s until about 2002, 2003. And Brian specifically had all sorts of stories about truckers he knew that were always on speed. My brother Brian, not that kind of guy to do that. And he was, I think my brother Brian was actually a very good truck driver. And, but he told me stories. I was out on the road with him a few times in his truck going back to the late 90s, early 2000s. And you'd hear crazy people on the CB, guys you knew who were hopped up on something. It's going on a lot in truck driving in the United States, probably all over the world, but probably a lot in the United States because it is such a big country and there are trucks that go from coast to coast. Unlike Europe, which is a little bit different, maybe Australia, but maybe not like Australia, but in the United States, I think we have a lot of truck drivers who are hopped up on something. And so when I read, and you should know there are rules, laws regarding how many hours a truck driver is allowed to put in per day. And they have a log book that they have to keep updated in case they get pulled over. And truck drivers, they can be pulled over at any time if a state police wants to check their log book to make sure they're not running over their hours. And the weird thing about truck driving is that they're the professionals. But you know, if you're a family of four driving from Maine to Florida to go to Disney World on your vacation and you drive, that's going to be like a 20, 5-hour drive, something like that. And there's no law in the land that says you can't do that. You just jump in the car, you stop and get gas, maybe mom and dad switch driving the whole way down. You could do it. You're not allowed to do that if you're a truck driver. You have to pull over to the side of the road for so many hours, rest, and then start driving again. Or for me, when I drove from Florida back to Pennsylvania back in, it's going to be almost a year now, hard to believe, a year ago, drove my parents' car back to Pennsylvania, took me about 16 hours. Truck driver's not allowed to do that. Not allowed to drive 16 hours in a row. Some weird quirks if you didn't know that about truck driving in the United States. But I saw this story and I was like, yep, I know the stories. And he's just lucky he didn't kill anybody. Let's move on to the show. If there's ever proof that there are certain speakers and writers and media types on the conservative side who just do things for attention, this is a good example of it. If you remember, I forget how long ago it was, maybe a couple months ago, Milo, and I'm not even going to try to pronounce his last name, the guy with a long Greek last name who worked for Breitbart.com. Remember, he went to Berkeley. He was going to speak there, and all the students and townspeople ended up throwing a riot because he was going to be there, didn't want to hear what he had to say. And I told you back then that I think that Milo did that because he needs that attention. And since then, I think maybe even in Milo's case, he's gotten a little bit more attention than he's wanted, than he has wanted ever, because of these statements he made about man-boy sex. Remember this? And now that's why you don't see him out there too much anymore. But this was not new for Milo to get this attention, for people to, you know, go crazy when he was going to come into town. And I speaking at some university. And I told you, I think he likes it. I think that he feeds off of it. I think that's what he wants. It keeps him in the news. And his cult members who follow him talk about, see, they're afraid of him. Look, you know, it's all a little bit childish to me. It really is. And I don't think that Milo or anybody else like him has really moved any sort of free speech or conservatism or libertarianism or rights in the United States. I don't think that any of those types of people have moved anything forward, not one inch, because I think it's all about them. They clothe it in it being about free speech and everything, and it's not. It's all about them. It's about them getting attention. It's about them being seen as icons and getting their love. That's what I believe. Now, if it couldn't get any crazier than that, Ann Coulter is now going to Berkeley, wants to speak there. And, she knows just what happened a couple months ago. She's going to go there now. And for what reason? I want you to think, all you adults out there, I want you to think long and hard about what exactly is her plan. Now, I want you to think real long and hard about this. Do you think that she is going there to advance conservatism and free speech? Or do you think that she's going there just to cause problems? Maybe because she knows what happened there a couple months ago and that she'll get more attention for it. Just announcing that she is planning to go there is going to get her a lot of attention. And I've told you, I think this is all a waste of time. As a guy who does conservatism 5 days a week, 1 hour a day, and has been doing this for a while, I really believe all of these conservatives who go to these college campuses and get booed off stage and get things thrown at them and riots and fires and ATM machines being broken into and everything else, I think this is all waste of time for those colleges, and I think it's all waste of time for these conservatives who, if they are running their schedule, or if they have some manager or, you know, some group on campus that's trying to bring a speaker, It's all a big waste of time. The truth is that these college kids, even if these speakers get to speak, these college kids aren't going to be any better off. If it were me and you are a conservative on one of these campuses, you shouldn't be there. Do not give these places any money. I know that sounds like, well, you're retreating. By going there, you are continuing, you're giving them the lifeblood on which they thrive, and that is money and attention. Remember that. You shouldn't be there. I say this about conservatives who work in the federal government, pushing around papers in some bureaucracy. You shouldn't be there. I say this about conservative people who work in public schools, who are forced, essentially, to teach climate change and evolution, and there's no other belief systems out there. You shouldn't be there. And for conservatives who are on these campuses, who are recruiting these speakers to come to campus, you students, you 20-year-olds who are conservatives on these campuses, you shouldn't be there. It is a big waste of your time. You could be getting an education somewhere else. You could have gone into the military. You could have taken that money, however you got that loan or whatever else, and started your own business and done something else, then go to one of these liberal colleges where your speech is being attacked, your rights are being attacked. Let these places die. Do not give them any more money. Don't give them your conservative money. You know, I can understand if this was like the first time that this ever happened. Whenever this started happening, that conservative media personalities started showing up on campuses and the liberals on the campus, whether it's the students or the administration or the professors, they start protesting. I can understand that if this was the first time. And it was a way to illustrate what is going on what is happening, to keep the language easy, what is happening on college campuses. Let's say if this was the 1970s or the 1980s, something like that. And I know there were all those protests in the 1960s as well, but that was about something else. Moving later, 70s and 80s, if there was a goal of showing how liberal higher education in the United States is, and you do that by going to one of these campuses and showing how much you're attacked and everything, I get that. Nobody's surprised by that anymore. Everybody knows. If Ann Coulter is going there under the guise, well, I just want to really show they did it to Milo and they're going to show it to me. I just want to really show how they haven't changed their ways at all. Everybody knows. There's no point in illustrating it anymore. Everybody knows. Some people love it. Some people hate it. This is what makes it even more incredible. The conservative parents will pay for their kids, maybe conservative or not, to go to these schools and their hard-earned money to keep these universities going. It's disgraceful. Because you know why? Because liberals would never do that. Liberal parents would never send their kids to conservative schools. Ever. But we as conservatives, we do it. So when I look at Ann Coulter announcing that she wants to go there, this is nothing but a pub grab, which means a publicity grab for her. Nobody's going to learn anything. Nobody's going to care. Everybody knows. Everybody knows everybody's wacko in Berkeley. That's just the way it is. Maybe she should go somewhere else where she could continue to inspire young conservatives. Maybe go to Hillsdale. Maybe go to Grove City. Maybe go to the Graduate School of Economics or something at Chicago, continuing to talk about how the fight is worth it. The conservative fight is worth it. because that's what conservatism really means right now, given the kind of president we have who got elected by so many conservatives who, in my opinion, made the wrong choice and should have just stayed out of the entire election. But she doesn't do that. Why? Not because she can't get paid. She probably could. Just doesn't get any attention. She gives a speech one of these places. It doesn't even make it in the news. She needs the controversy, just like Milo needs the controversy. I mean, you get the idea they'd be disappointed if these riots and everything weren't held. And for liberals out there, they should learn from something from this. If you liberals out there, I'm just giving you a good advice, piece of advice, not that you'd ever take it. Because I want you to know, as I'm going to say again, I'm disgusted by Milo. I'm disgusted by Ann Coulter. I'm disgusted by these people who feed off controversy and essentially egg these people on. Knowing when there's so many other places that these people, those kinds of people, if they truly, truly believe what they're saying about freedom of speech and everything else, they could be making an impact somewhere else. But for you liberals out there, you want Ann Coulter and Milo and these people to go away? Stop protesting them. Don't pay attention to them. You haven't figured out that these people feed off your craziness. The question is, can you control your craziness? Can you control your insanity? Can you control your desire to go out into the streets and burn anything when Ann Coulter or Milo, whoever else, gets within the city limits? These people feed off this stuff. They love it. And I hate it. I hate it. You know what I feed off of me as a person? I feed off hope. I feed off giving out good information. I feed off having an impact on people's lives, a positive impact. There is no positive impact here. What too many speakers on the conservative side have been doing for too many years, showing up at these places and get... I realize the first couple times, it's very instructive. It's very helpful for everybody to see what's going on campuses. Everybody knows now. It's been going on for 20-some years. Everybody knows. But she's going to go there. And, I mean, do I think that it's worth them riding? No, I don't. But she knows they're going to do that. And she knows they're going to do that because they got to be them. So in a way, she is inciting it. Whereas if she just stayed away, which she should do, these people wouldn't do this. Because you're not going to change them. Berkeley is Berkeley is Berkeley. So I have serious concerns. I would not go anywhere where I thought showing up would cause, you know, violence in the streets. I just wouldn't. I'd look at other possibilities of ways I could affect people's lives in a positive way. That's what I would do. But these people, they need it. So they can make fun of it. So they can make jokes about it. So they can write it, put it in a book. And they're willing to have windows broken and fire started so they can have those stories. And they can say, look how afraid they are of me. It's a little pathetic. But I saw that. That comes from CBS News, by the way. I'm sure the story is several other places. But I don't know. There's just many things that seem wrong about it. Let's move on to something else. Neil Gorsuch, I guess the nomination process is going to continue next week. A lot of words being delivered back and forth about what's going to happen. I continue to believe that this is all much ado about nothing. I've seen there are a couple I think all of the Republicans in the Senate are already on board. And at least a couple Democrat senators have said they are going to vote for Neil Gorsuch. I think one is Joe Manchin from West Virginia, and then a woman, Heitkamp, is that her name? H-E-I-T-K-A-M-P, is that how you pronounce it? I believe she's a Democrat. She has said that she's going to vote for him. Now, the big deal regarding all of this is that there is the filibuster, which Chuck Schumer has threatened to use to block the nomination of Neil Gorsuch. Now, you'll remember that this did not go on during the time that the Senate was run by Harry Reid and the Republicans were in the minority. The Republicans could have done something about it, but they chose not to. All it took was a simple majority because you need 60 votes in the Senate to break a filibuster unless you go for the nuclear option, which Mitch McConnell could use. It's all these procedural issues that I'm still not sure. I have to admit, I'm not 100% clear on them. And so if I'm not 100% clear, I'm sure the American people, when you start talking about the nuclear option and filibusters and Senate nominations and everything, I mean, it's just like a big word salad. They hear the words, they know it's English, but they're not sure still what you're saying. And I think what is instructive here, and this is why I don't think that they're going to filibuster it. I think that they're going to allow a simple majority to confirm Neil Gorsuch probably the end of next week. And all of this talk, I think this is nothing but a big show by the Democrats, I think. And the reason I think that is I found this story. It was at townhall.com, but actually came from a local website, I think Kansas City, Missouri website, newspaper there, about Claire McCaskill, who is a Democrat senator from Missouri. And she was talking to donors recently, and somehow she was recorded. And you get the feeling, I mean, she's just about comes out and says it, that she is not a fan of the filibuster. Because, and it's exactly for the reasons that I've been telling you for a long time, that I don't think that the Democrats are going to go crazy on this nomination. I think that they may go crazy on the next nomination, especially if it's one of the liberal judges who retires or unfortunately dies, whether it's Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Stephen Breyer, who knows? Maybe even Anthony Kennedy. That she says to this donor, and she's these bunch of donors, and she's kind of right. She actually made a little bit of a joke in saying, Gorsuch was one of the better ones. And what she was referring to was all the people who were on Donald Trump's list, this list that came out over a year ago. And he said that he would nominate somebody from that list. And I would like to say that Donald Trump has kept his word. I'm still not sure he has any idea who any of those people were on that list, either then or now. But Claire McCaskill, having seen the list, said Neil Gorsuch is one of the better ones. And when she says better ones, she means probably one of the less conservative ones. And I think in the end, I think that is an accurate assessment on her part. I think that's what eventually is going to happen should Neil Gorsuch get to the Supreme Court. I don't think he's going to be an Antonin Scalia. I don't think he's going to be a Clarence Thomas. I don't think he's going to be a William Rehnquist, somebody like that. So I wouldn't get your hopes up too high. Just saying. Because the reason McCaskill was saying that is that her donors are telling, well, you need to fight them, fight Neil Gorsuch any way you can. And these people are talking about Merrick Garland. I'm going to tell you something. I don't think these Democrat senators give a dang about Merrick Garland. You know how I know? Because the guy who nominated him, Barack Obama, now that he's not president, I don't think he gives a dang about Merrick Garland either. I don't think so. I think Merrick Garland, none of these senators even knew who Merrick Garland was until he got nominated. And so they came into their realm of consciousness for a while. And then when he didn't get nominated, the Republicans wouldn't allow him to get a seat before their committee up there. That as soon as Barack Obama ceased to be president, I think they moved on to other things. I think the Senate Democrats have so much more on their mind. I don't think they give a dang about Merrick Garland, but it makes a really good story. But these donors are telling, well, look what they did to Merrick Garland, so you have to fight. You see what they did, now you have to fight back. And what she's saying is exactly what I'm saying, is that we need to go along with the Republicans on this one. We need to. Because if we don't, then they're going to break. They're going to get rid of the filibuster. And if you think Neil Gorsuch is a bad pick, you wait till next time when they know they know we won't be able to use the filibuster anymore because they'll get rid of it. And that's the nuclear option, getting rid of the filibuster. Who do you think they'll nominate now? Then they won't need us at all to nominate anybody. And I think that that is a fairly convincing argument. And that's why I've been saying this since Neil Gorsuch, and probably even before that. I've said that I don't see them going crazy with this. I think that this all show. I just don't think that your average liberal has figured it out yet. Obviously, Claire McCaskill's donors, whoever they are, in Missouri haven't figured it out. All they see is you can't confirm this person. And she outright comes out and says there are many things about Neil Gorsuch that concern her. And I believe she's telling the truth. She's a liberal. Maybe not as liberal as Chuck Schumer. Maybe not as kooky as Nancy Pelosi. But when Claire McCaskill says that, I believe her. And she still may not vote for Neil Gorsuch, but I think that what she's saying is that Neil Gorsuch deserves a vote simply because the alternative of filibustering all of this could make it worse for Democrats down the road. And I agree. If you think that Donald Trump is going to keep his promise of nominating, continuing to nominate people from that list. Now, what may undermine Claire McCaskill's position, and I think that this is possible too, is what if somebody convinces her, well, you know, Donald Trump is not, and this would all be true, and you conservatives have to remember this, one of her donors, maybe an assistant, somebody like that, says to her, you got to remember something though. Donald Trump isn't conservative. He may not be as liberal as you are, but he is not Rush Limbaugh. He's not Ed Densel. He's not the people at National Review. He's not the people at Commentary Magazine. He's not the people at the Heritage Foundation. You have to remember, Claire, that Donald Trump, you probably have more in common with Donald Trump politically than you probably realize right at this second. He may be in the opposing party, and he said a lot of things that you don't like, but practically, when it comes to government, he has said quite a few things that you probably agree with, especially when it comes to healthcare and some other issues. And then look at his daughter, Ivanka. She's no conservative. And look how much sway she seems to have with her dad. So it very well could be. And look how mad Donald Trump is at the Freedom Caucus right now. That it very well could be that, yes, this Neil Gorsuch, you know, if you improve. It very well could be that the next nominee isn't that conservative. And it very well may be by that time that Donald Trump is so ticked off maybe of conservative members of Congress for whatever reason, having nothing to do with judges, that he nominates somebody that you may like. It's very possible. I don't know how probable it is, but it's very possible. And if somebody convinces her of that, and that argument actually is a pretty good one, and she takes that back to her people, Chuck Schumer and the rest of them, they may figure out that the filibuster is the best way to go. Betting on the fact that, you know, the Freedom Caucus, other conservatives, ticking Trump off because of health care and maybe a couple other issues, and he says, the hell with it. I'm going to work with the Democrats. I'm going to nominate somebody that liberal Republicans and a bunch of Democrats will vote for, and we'll see how they like that. I mean, if Donald Trump is going to threaten the Freedom Caucus over health care, then he'll threaten conservatives over anything. Something very interesting to think about. I got to go to the break. You've been listening to America's Conservative Podcast.
The voice of American conservatism, WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
And we're back at America's Conservative Podcast. You know, this is, you know, talking about Neil Gorsuch, going back to that for a little bit, and Claire McCaskill, and what the mentality is of Democrats at this point in the Senate, and how they're going to respond to their donors and their constituents, their voters, as to how to handle this entire situation. I think that they have to keep in mind that Donald Trump is not your average Republican president. And I think I totally agree with what Claire McCaskill was saying, this point she is making with her donors in this recording that was made. Once again, I don't know how recent this was. I'm going to guess it was within the last week or 2 weeks. But you can never discount the wild card that is Donald Trump. If this was George W. Bush even, or of course going back to Bush 41 or Ronald Reagan, then you'd probably know much more what to expect. I don't think that you'd be too surprised of anything that those guys might do with judicial nominations, although they did make mistakes. Even Ronald Reagan made mistakes, Sandra Day O'Connor, Bush 41 made a mistake. It seems that George W. Bush made a mistake with John Roberts, with what he did with health care, and maybe that's a vote that John Roberts now regrets. So each one of them is going to make mistakes. I would not say that any of those choices were done on purpose. Whereas Donald Trump, he could do things just to spite everybody. Just because he's ticked off. I say, oh, you don't like, that's not good enough for you? Well, then take some of this. And go the exact opposite direction. And this is why I continue to say, I've said this going back even before the election. If Donald Trump got elected, there are going to be times when liberals are really, really going to like what he does. Because I think his knee-jerk reaction is being liberal. And when he does that, there are going to be conservative Republicans, both in the House and the Senate, are going to act out against him, are going to oppose him. And then he's going to act against them, going on Twitter and calling them names. And to the point of maybe doing things just to go along with Democrats. I mean, what do you think this healthcare thing is about? Now that the Freedom Caucus got in the way of the AHCA, he says, okay, well, I guess I'm going to work with Democrats then. Claire McCaskill should think long and hard about that. Chuck Schumer should think long and hard about that. Don't get me wrong. I hope Neil Gorsuch gets nominated. But this is what, once again, I didn't vote for Donald Trump. I didn't vote for Hillary Clinton for president. You know who I voted for? I voted for myself. And if she were talking about me, if I'd have become president, and she were talking about me to her donors, she could be pretty guaranteed that I would be nominating the most conservative person I could pick, I could find, who was willing to take the job. And so her comments to the donors would make even more sense than they do now. She'd be exactly right. Well, you know what? If we don't go along with Neil Gorsuch, who knows who President Denzel is going to nominate next time? If you think Neil Gorsuch is too far off the reservation, what do you get next time? And what if it's one of the liberal judges? What then? And she'd be right. With Donald Trump, much more of a wild card. And we just have to keep that in mind. And I think that we as conservatives have to keep that in mind on any topic from now until Donald Trump doesn't live in the White House anymore. I still stand by the fact, though, that I think this is all just for show. I think it is. I think they're trying to put on a good act opposing Neil Gorsuch. And in the end, they're not going to filibuster him. They're not going to vote for him. But it'll go, what, 56, 44, something like that. And everybody will just move on the way. And Democrats will walk around with their fingers crossed, hoping none of the liberal judges die the next at least 4 years, so they have a chance to win back the White House in 2020. I think that's the plan. Let's move on to something else. You know, along these lines, was an article written by Rich Lowry at National Review, but it's also at Politico.com, and it's called The Crisis of Trumpism. And I've kind of touched on this before. If you want to just generalize Trumpism as being populism, meaning whatever the people want, whatever majority of them say is what they should get. If they want a big wall from, you know, sea to shining sea, they should get it. If they want more entitlements, they should get it. And this is not the way our country was set up. Our founding fathers were terrified by the tyranny of the majority. And that's why our system of government has so many mechanisms where the minority can fight back. We just spoke about it before, the filibuster. That's a way for a minority to act out against a tyrannical majority. Various ways. It's the reason that in our Congress, we have one legislative body that's based on the population of states, the House, but we also have another body, the Senate, which is considered to be the higher chamber, the more exclusive chamber, where all the states are equal. California gets two senators, Alaska gets two senators, Texas gets two senators, Rhode Island gets two senators. They're all equal. It's very clever. These guys, these founding fathers, smart fellas. And this is one of the reasons the populism, in my mind, should have no place in the United States. But I think the reason it does, and this isn't something, I don't know if I've talked about it recently. I think that this is mentioned, I've read a little bit about this. I think that this is mentioned in Friedrich Hayek's The Road to Serfdom. I think a little bit, I think it's touched on something. It's a book like that. Maybe it was an Ayn Rand, some things that Ayn Rand wrote or nonfiction work. The problem with populism, the problem with going along with majorities is obviously the tyrannical aspect, that there is always going to be a minority of people who may be a slave to the majority. And who knows, given our flaws as human beings, what that can mean. What can mean? It could be something as simple as a judicial nomination in the Senate or going way to the other side. A bunch of people in Germany taking their frustrations out about life in World War I on the Jews. Just, you know, the tyranny of majority, if you believe, you know, if you believe that people shouldn't get their way all the time, that the majority shouldn't get their way all the time. And that's what I believe. I believe in principles. I don't believe in crowds. And I don't believe in mobs. This is why we are a nation of laws, not of men. We do not determine what is right on how many people like it. And that's something that's very hard for people to understand. I think especially when they want their way so bad. The other part of this, though, and what makes, I think, the crisis of Trumpism, and you could say the crisis of populism so bad, or the crisis, why it exists, why it seems in theory to be so good, but horrible in practice, is because your average person, and this is not a put-down to anybody. This is not a put-down, but I just don't think people think this way. People don't sit down and think about all of their ideas about every topic in the world and try to figure out if they all make sense. They don't try to figure out, well, does my attitude toward immigration in the United States go along with my attitudes towards trade? Are they congruent? Do they make sense? Can I easily go from one to the other without trying to make, you know, work myself into a logical pretzel. Do my attitudes, if I'm pro-life, how does that square with my attitudes toward rights, people's rights to free speech? People don't think about that stuff. They got millions and millions of other things to do. And I don't know if, of course, it's not a requirement to be a citizen of any country to actually sit down and think about, you know, how you think about things and whether every idea in your head goes along with each other. Does everything, I guess to use a word, sync up, or does everything jive? The only places in the world you have to do that would be in real tyrannies, dictatorships like North Korea, maybe a couple other places, where your ideas have to be one thing or you're dead. There's one way to think, and that's it. Most of the rest of the world, people have freedom of thought and freedom of choice. They can think and do what they want. And even as bad as we may think that Iran and some other countries are, surely the people in those countries have more choices than the people in North Korea do. But here in the United States, as much news as we have, so many political issues, and it's important in the United States because we're seen as being the world power. We are, like it or not, the world's policeman. Nobody cares who the prime minister of Canada is. Nobody cares who the president of Mexico is. Nobody cares who the president or prime minister of Australia is. They're fine allies. They're good sometimes. They're bad sometimes. But nobody cares who the president of Japan is. The rest of the world, all they care about, who's president of the United States. What is the United States doing? But still, we have citizens who go about their daily lives and don't think about politics every day. So they don't take time to really sort everything out. Where is everything? That is left to people like me who do a show every day. And I feel when I come to the microphone that my ideas have to make sense. Now, you may think that I'm wrong. You may think that I shouldn't be conservative or anything else. But I should be able to flow from one issue to the next and not face any contradictions. That's what I'm always working toward in my philosophy and how I feel about conservatism. Most people don't do that, and it's not a requirement. I'm not putting people down because of this. But just like I don't think, you know, try to figure out the unified field theory in physics, that I even know what that principle is, is amazing. You know, I don't sit around every day trying to figure that out. Physics, I like physics, but it's not a real passion of mine. Whereas that's the realm of physics professors. So where I'm going with this is because people don't sit down and they don't try to organize their political issues into a nice little box, you get a lot of contradictions. You get people who want small government, but they want the entitlement state to go up. They want everybody to have health insurance. But they also think that health insurance companies and companies in general should only have to you shouldn't have to take customers who are going to put them out of business. They believe that the United States should have cheap labor, but on the other hand, they're for some sort of, but they believe in the minimum wage. They like their free, they like their cheap stuff at Walmart, but they want to get into a trade war with China and other countries. This is just the way it is. I wish it wasn't like this, but I'm not going to criticize people because, once again, there's only so many hours in a day, so many days in a week, so many weeks in a year, and people have other concerns in their lives. They're finding out they have cancer, they're taking care of their children and everything, and then once in a while, they watch the news and they go and vote once in a while. But getting back to what the crisis of Trump is and the crisis of populism is that Your average person doesn't have all of these things figured out. All they know is what they want, even if it contradicts something else that they want. And this is where Trumpism breaks down. This is where it breaks down. This is why, even on the left, you find a liberal politician who is just flat out liberal on whatever topics may be. That person has a much easier time probably holding on to his or her seat than somebody who is in the middle, who is kind of wishy-washy. And you're kind of seeing this in how politics have gone, is that over the years, polarized. It seems that the parties are more polarized, that you do have more people off to the sides, off to the edges of the political spectrum. Whereas both in the Republican and Democrat Party, you don't have a Sam Nunn on the Democrat side anymore, who was a liberal in some ways, but he was tough on defense and a couple other issues. You don't have any pro-choice Democrats anymore at any significant level anywhere. And on the Republican side, some of you may think that Mitch McConnell is some crazy kook moderate who's a liberal and everything else, but you compare Mitch McConnell to the Republicans who were in the Senate in the 1970s, he's a radical conservative. Radical. So things have changed. And I think it's because people who are more aligned in their ideology have a better chance of sticking around and winning and changing people's minds than a person who just kind of, does whatever people want. Because although the people may want get what they want this time, really people, all they remember is what they don't get. And so a person may be in the majority this time, but in the minority next time and be ticked off. Just a theory. And I think this is why populism, great on paper, doesn't work in practice, because politicians, they make more than one vote. As a president, you're going to have many bills come to your desk. As a member of the House and of the Senate or a governor, you're going to have to make many, many, many political decisions. And if you are a person who is always going along with the majority, well, eventually you're going to tick everybody off, because no person is in the majority all the time. So you end up having an electorate who doesn't trust you. Whereas if you're just consistently conservative, your constituents are going to be like, you know what? Either like him or hate him. You know what you're going to get. And I think that that's why those kinds of politicians stay around longer. I think it's the reason that Ronald Reagan stuck around for 8 years, but Bush 41 only stuck around for 4. He was a little wishy-washy. Kind of went all over the spectrum. Whereas George W. Bush, not conservative, but much more consistent. Much more consistent. So, just a theory. And I think this is where Trumpism is going to collapse. I think that as a president, you have to have hardcore principles if you want to stick around, whatever they are, whether they're liberal like Barack Obama or more conservative like Ronald Reagan. I think to survive, you have to do these things. Now, you may say, well, what about Bill Clinton? Well, I think with Bill Clinton is that, first of all, he was a liberal, but he wasn't as liberal as his wife. And really, as governor of Arkansas, he was much, although he's a scoundrel and a bad guy, he was much more conservative than you probably would have gotten from a lot of other Democrat governors at that time. I also think that what helped Bill Clinton is that it seems that everybody who's ever met him loves him. Clintons have a lot of friends all over the political spectrum. That helps too. And I think also what helped him was that he was able, at least in his re-election in 1996, he was able to demonize the Newt Gingrich in particular to get that re-election. I think he successfully did that. So, I mean, I guess they're, you know, still working on it. But I think the main core message here is that people don't sit down and think about their political issues and whether, you know, the hierarchy of what is number one, what is number two, and if they all go together. They just have thoughts. They have beliefs and never really sit down to think if this one goes along with that one. And this is why I think you're going to continue to have an administration with Donald Trump and the rest of his people that is very schizophrenic. All over the spectrum, and that's hard to get anything done. That is the crisis of Trumpism. It's the reason that populism, at no point in our country's history, has really had a firm hold on anything. William Jennings Bryant and Huey Long or whoever these guys were that were considered to be populists. Came and went. You can't just rule or lead by polls and by the majority. And on top of that, it could be the majority a lot of times is wrong. They may think they're right. And it's not like they're trying to put the minority, they're not trying to control the minority or anything else, but there are many times in life where the majority is just wrong, just factually wrong. Not morally wrong, but factually wrong. And then that can cost a politician as well. Let's move on to one more thing before I leave you for the weekend. There is this representative, and he just happens to be from here in Florida. I don't know where he's from, though. His name's Ted Yoho, Y-O-H-O. And he was on, on CNN, and he was talking about Representative Nunes, N-U-N-E-S, or is it Nunez? I don't know. I just read news. I don't listen to it or watch it. Talking about this representative who came out and said he had proof that, yes, Trump Tower and Trump was being wiretapped. Remember that? Seems like yesterday it happened. It's been a little while. But Ted Yoho, this representative, a fellow, I'm going to guess he's friends with Representative Nunes, or Nunez, told, I guess this interviewer on CNN, I forget who it was, you know, when this reporter asked him, you know, was that something appropriate for this guy to automatically get this information and go to the White House? Why didn't he go to his fellow representatives on his committee first? And the guy said, well, he works for the president and answers the president. This is what a representative, and this is a Republican, in the House of Representatives said. That a representative works for the president and answers to the president. Has he ever never heard of separation of powers? And the funny thing is, even on CNN, the reporter asked him, doesn't he answer to his constituents? And then Yoho said, well, yeah, them too. Oh, we'll just kind of throw those voters in after the fact. Yeah, we'll just, yeah. Oh, yeah, them too. I don't know what to make of this. You know, people sometimes don't do very well on camera or anything, but it seemed that it flowed out of his mouth so easily because I did watch that little clip. He works for the president, answers to the president. Well, I'm sure his constituents and his voters are going to be a little amazed by that. Remember, the reason we have separation of powers is because the different branches of government are supposed to be adversarial. They're not supposed to work for each other. Checks and balances, honey. But I got to go. You can find this show Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. Eastern on RedStateTalkRadio.com. You can follow on Twitter, USA Podcast. I have a new episode of my other program, my Missing Persons program, Unfound, coming out today. You can find it at iTunes and Podomatic, and that Twitter feed is Unfound Podcast. You can check that out. Really appreciate it. I got to go. Have a beautiful weekend. I'm listening to America's Conservative Podcast.